Radio Universidad de Los Lagos presenta su programa en inglés. Oh, yeah. Let's Go. Un espacio dedicado a difundir la práctica de esta lengua extranjera en nuestra comunidad universitaria. Acompáñenos y sepan cómo el conocimiento del inglés puede ayudarnos a tener más y mejores oportunidades en nuestras vidas. Conduce el profesor Luis Ruiz Pailalet.
Hello, hello there, radio listeners. I am Luis Ruiz Pailalet, and this is your radio program in English, Let's Go. We are broadcasting through Radio Universidad de los Lagos every Wednesday at 8 p.m., and you can also listen to us on Sundays at 4 p.m. As you know, Let's Go is an initiative from the Competencias Transversales en Inglés section of Universidad de los Lagos. And our mission is to bring more instances of English learning to our students and to those members of the public who are interested in this foreign language. And today is with me Professor James Parkey, and he is the director of the Centro de Estudios del Desarrollo Regional y Políticas Públicas, CEDER, at our university. Mr. Park has a PhD in Spanish and Latin American Literature from Indiana University in the United States of America. And without further ado, let us hear in James's voice where he is from, what he does at our university, and hello, James.
Hello, Luis. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the invitation to be on your radio program today.
Oh, this is the radio program of the university.
Of the university,
I am the host, let's say. And the reason why we decided to invite you, James, is first of all, you are a native speaker of English. You work for the university, but are you Chilean? where are you from, James?
The name is quite confusing when people hear me speak in Spanish because I don't have an accent either in Spanish nor in English. Mm-hmm. The reason that I'm Chilean and a United States citizen, I was born in Antofagasta a year after my parents arrived in Chile in 1966.
They are from America.
They are from the U.S. Okay. They are from the state of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Famous for its Kentucky Fried Chicken and for its horse races and for its tobacco.
Huh? The Derby you have?
The Derby, the Kentucky Derby. Okay. Yes. Actually, my mother and two of my sisters live in Louisville, Kentucky, where the Kentucky Derby is carried out every first weekend in May, I believe.
Okay.
Is the date.
Yes.
It's a big event.
They arrived in Antofagasta, you said?
In Antofagasta, yes. They came in through the port of Valparaíso,
mm-hmm,
on a ship from New York.
By ship.
It was, I think, a 3-week venture.
Yeah. Voyage.
Voyage. Yeah. they were coming as missionaries, mm-hmm, Southern Baptist missionaries to, mm-hmm, Chile. The Southern Baptists had installed missions here in Chile in the early 1920s, and carried out this type of work in rural areas, but also in urban areas, primarily Santiago. And by the time my parents arrived, they were pretty much set up in all the cities in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, my parents chose Antofagasta. They had met a missionary that had been in Chile before and who was also stationed in Antofagasta.
Wow.
And she convinced them. And kind of odd, they fell in love with it. And we lived there my parents from 66 on through 1973, which, mm-hmm, is when we were diplomatically told to get out of the country.
Mm, yeah.
For other reasons we all know.
Yeah.
I was born and raised in Antofagasta, and then after a stint back in the U.S., we came back to Chile, but we came back to Santiago, mm-hmm, and lived in Santiago. I did all my prep school and high school in Santiago, graduated from high school in Santiago and then went to the States for my university studies.
That's quite a long journey.
It was. It was. I lived in the U.S. for 18 years before coming back.
Yes.
I did undergraduate, graduate, master's, and doctoral studies in the U.S. and worked at a university for 5 years before deciding to come back to what I now conceive and I have always conceived of as my home.
This is quite interesting. Somehow your parents wanted to come back to Chile after this long break in the U.S.
Well, I guess I wanted to come back after pretty much for the whole time I was in the U.S. I never felt comfortable in the U.S. Mm-hmm. those 18 years that I lived there. Mm-hmm. Even though we would, I was 18 years when I left the home, left my home, to
that
go study in the U.S.
That is pretty customary in American families.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And even before, earlier, 18, mm-hmm. 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much a tradition to leave the home, set up your own, live alone or in a couple arrangement. But this was also pretty much a tradition for missionary families where all missionary kids, which is what we were. I'm the youngest of five.
Five children.
And we all went to the States after graduating from high school and went about on our own, setting up our own apartments, living at the universities where we all studied, and then getting our respective jobs and carrying out our families.
From these five kids, you are the only one that is currently living in Chile?
Yes, yes. I was the only one born in Chile. My brother, which is my nearest sibling, is 4 years older than me. Mm-hmm. But he was 2 years old when my family came to Chile.
Yeah.
And all of my siblings live in the U.S. Two of them live in Louisville, Kentucky. Two sisters, my two oldest sisters. The other sister lives in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother lives in rural Virginia.
Right.
Rural Virginia.
Your folks are still alive?
My mother's still alive. Uh-huh. She's just turned 89 uh-huh. this year. Uh-huh. Back in October, I went to visit her.
Good.
And my father passed away in 2013 after several years battling with Alzheimer's several issues there. And It was good to visit, and I'm hoping to continue my visits on a more regular basis. It's been less frequent lately.
Yes, yes.
I have children now mm-hmm. that are at an age where it's difficult to get away.
How do you keep in contact with your mama? Is it through WhatsApp? Or?
Primarily WhatsApp with my siblings, uh-huh. and with my mother, we usually talk almost every week via Skype.
Mm.
Even though she's practically blind, yeah. but she can see some semblance,
uh-huh.
and we try to talk every week.
This is just amazing the way in which now you can communicate with anyone,
right?
Wherever they are.
Well, it's curious. I remember when we lived in Santiago, my father was a what do you call these radio ham radio operator.
Uh-huh.
And we would always speak with my grandparents and some of my aunts and uncles back in the U.S. also on a weekly basis, but via ham radio. Now there's so many other options. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I always felt such a big envy when I saw these huge antennas in someone's garden. You knew immediately that they had a radio.
Yeah.
They could, you know. They could even speak to people on ships.
Right, right. and even on the other side of the globe.
Yeah,
so,
that was science fiction to me in the 70s and 80s.
It was interesting.
Would you say that because of your experience in Chile, you wanted to do this PhD in Latin American literature? What made you follow this path?
It's curious. When I went back to the U.S., I entered the university thinking of studying basically languages, but not primarily languages, mm-hmm. and definitely not literature at that time. I was more interested in education. I was interested in arts, in music. Mm-hmm. I began studying a career in interior design.
You have some artistic interests
yes,
as
I
well.
Do. And I still do. Mm-hmm. But when it came to the moment in which I had to decide, definitely, because in the U.S. you have almost, in most universities, you have 2 years. If you haven't decided yet, you mm-hmm. have about 2 years to decide which program,
while
which
you're
career.
Still at the university?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Caramba.
So it's kind of what we have here in some universities, the bachiller mm-hmm. in some universities in Santiago. They offer 2 years flexibility. You take a kind of a common curricula, which gives you the basis to select any other track. Can be engineering, in the engineering world, in the sciences, mm. in the arts and humanities, and others.
Sounds like the perfect choice for a dilettante.
It does. It does. And when it came to that point where I had to decide, my options were limited. I decided to dual major in interior design and Spanish. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I chose Spanish was because I felt I wanted to maintain this link with Chile and with my upbringing, with my what I consider my native language, mm-hmm. And that was the only way I could do it in the U.S. So I figured, well, this would be my career choice. I'll be a teacher of Spanish in the U.S.
That must have been in the early 80s.
It was. It was. I finished my undergraduate in 1990. Mm-hmm. So I entered in 86. Mm-hmm. 86.
Yeah. At that time, the presence of Spanish-speaking immigrants was not that much.
Right. It wasn't as prevalent as it is today, mm-hmm. and even less so where I was, which yeah. is the Midwest in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have large Spanish immigrant populations on the East Coast, in the South, on the West Coast, but not in the middle. And now you go back and you can find Spanish speakers just about anywhere in any store, at multiple levels of society, mm-hmm. And it's pretty much all over the U.S.
What is the reception that these Spanish speakers have now that you have like a new president in the States and immigration seems to be like a big issue?
It is. It is. Well, I suspect that most of our listeners would agree that the current government in the U.S. has created a really difficult situation for immigrants, particularly Hispanic immigrants, mm-hmm. but not exclusively. Mm-hmm. And that has created a lot of social unrest and literally separation of families, parents from children, mm. all that has been in the news recently about the particularly Mexican immigrants separate the children from their parents has been a critical issue in civil rights, in human rights, and particularly in external international policy in the U.S. recently. It's frustrating. It's blatant bigotry, racism, and it is really sad to see how it's affecting a lot of the population in the U.S. now.
Yes, the news that we get from there, like, sometimes are really sad, mm-hmm. Especially when you see that, as you said, the families are being kept apart. Mm-hmm. Well, we're reaching the middle point of our program, and this is the time when we ask our guests to share with us a song that they would like to listen to and to tell us why this song is meaningful to them. So, James, what song would you like to listen to?
Well, I'd like for the public to hear this song. It's The End of the World as We Know It by REM. Mm-hmm. It's a band from the south of the U.S., from Atlanta. that came out in 1987, I believe, the song on the album. And it kind of means a lot because I was entering it came out while I was an undergraduate, but it was pretty strong hit during my early graduate studies.
Okay, so we will listen to it now, and then James will explain to us why he chose this song by R.E.M.
That's great, it starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane, listen to yourself, churn world, serve its own needs, dummy, serve your own needs, beat it up, an ox beat, grunt, no strength, the ladder starts to clatter with fear, fight down, high wire and a fire, representing seven games in the government for hire and a combat site. Left and west are coming in a hurry with the furies beating down your neck. Team, my team, reporters, babble, Trump, tethered crop, look at that, no plane, fine, then, overflow, population, common poop, but it'll do, save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve its own needs, listen to your heartbeat, dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate. Automotive, incinerate, light a candle, light a motive, step down, watch your heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steer clear, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world. Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, symbiotic, patriotic, slam, but that, right?
That was the end of the world, but not literally, by R.E.M. Then please, James, tell us your thoughts on this song.
Well, I guess part of my reason for selecting the song in particular was kind of a pivotal moment in my studies, mm-hmm. because even though this song came out in 1987, it was still pretty much a hit when I was entering graduate school, my master's program in 1991. And with all the situation that was going on worldwide at that point, it's kind of a pivotal moment in not only U.S. history, not only in my life.
Can you remember what the facts were?
Well, like there was a lot going on with the world powers then. Mm-hmm. Kind of the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. The preoccupation with nuclear weapons, the social criticism going on about different economic sectors in the U.S. in particular. So I kind of identified with some of the lyrics in the song, and it was obviously something that we listened to, we heard on the radio back when people listen to radio, rather than just boxed music, and it also represents for me in particular a breaking point in U.S. musical history, because it's emblematic in the sense that, at least the way I perceived it, previous to the late '80s, I'd say the mid '80s, really, previously to the mid '80s. Mm-hmm. The U.S. musical industry was pretty much focused and based in the two artistic and cosmopolitan areas in Chile, New York and Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So any musical band or independent or individual solo artist needed to go through either Los Angeles or New York. Like here in Chile, when things want to happen, for instance, in film or in music, you have to, or in literature, sometimes you have to go through Santiago.
Yes, you have to.
Similar situations in the U.S. where musicians had to go to travel to Los Angeles, mm-hmm. live in Los Angeles mm-hmm. or New York, in order to get promotion, in order to move forward. But at this point in time in the U.S., there were several other developments of music industry in other areas, the South, particularly REM from Atlanta mm-hmm. in Georgia, became and still is a strong musical production and other arts as well. The North, Central North, Chicago. Chicago has always been a musical base, but it spread through other areas of the Midwest, including Indiana, including Cleveland, Ohio, including Milwaukee, including Madison, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. These kind of secondary cities
yeah.
became places where music and other arts can be developed. And REM is one example of that. So it's, we could make it equivalent to some sense of decentralization that is going on in Chile today, in this case, the musical industry.
Yeah.
So it's something I also identified with.
In the 80s, when I wanted to read whatever was written in English, I had to go to the library of the Chileno Norteamericano in Santiago. And I remember some magazines like maybe Billboard or mm-hmm. Guitar, whatever.
Yeah.
And REM were classified under independent and probably college radio
right.
bands.
Right.
Later, they became mainstream.
Right.
Thank you very much for sharing that fact about REM. And a thing that I mentioned about Professor James Park is that he's the director of the CEDER. Do you think this qualifies as a think tank in our university? What would you say is the mission of CEDER?
Well, we as an academic unit within the university, in certain ways we're equivalent to other departments, but in other ways we're not. In what sense? We have kind of a mission to promote and develop research and graduate work in the areas of the social sciences. We administer from the CEDER a master's program in social science and a doctoral program in social sciences.
Mm-hmm.
We collaborate with the Department of Social Sciences with the Masters in Human Sciences. And we have collaborated with the Department of Humanities and Arts in what used to be the Masters in Cultural Studies and Literary Studies. So I would say primarily our mission is graduate work and research, and primarily research in the development studies of our territory, the university's territory, which can be designed or defined as the region, the Región de los Lagos, but we approach it from a more of a systemic manner of thinking, in which our region, our territory, is basically what we call the Sur Austral, the Zona Sur Austral, which, depending on who defines it, we kind of define it from Temuco South.
Ooh, on the way to Antarctica.
Yeah. Not many of us have done any kind of research in the Antarctica, but we have been to Magallanes, Punta Arenas, Aysén, Coyhaique, and places in between. I'd say we focus primarily on continental Los Lagos and Los Ríos, which used to be part of Los Lagos. And
until 5 years ago, probably 10 years ago.
Yeah, not long ago. And the island of Chiloé and Palena. That's kind of our focus. I'd say less in Palena as a province of the region, but primarily continental Los Lagos and Chiloé.
Are you the head of one of these postgraduate courses? Do you work as the leader of a team?
I currently coordinate the area of culture, what we call cultural identity, culture and identity, in the doctoral program. With the doctoral program has three lines of development. One is cultural identity, the other is economic and environment, and the third is the governance and public policies. And with four other colleagues, we kind of populate the academic team in the area of culture and identity. I've also, I was the director of the program up until 2018, when it became evident that a change was required, and another colleague assumed that role. I've also done classes in three master's programs here at the university. Aside from giving classes in undergraduate, I've done classes in the Carrera de Pedagogía en Castellano, and Pedagogía de Educación General Básica at some point, Trabajo Social, social work, and architecture.
There's something that I've been thinking about. You said culture and identity. That all of that connected to this region?
Primarily with this region. But since it is a doctoral program, we deal with from theoretical models of what culture means and what culture is and how culture develops and societies promote certain reflections or representations of culture, and how these translate into local, regional identities. We've tried to develop kind of a way of considering culture and identity as territorially specific. So we're not only thinking of what constitutes what some would call a national identity,
yes,
but what composes all those sub-identities within what has been invented as a national identity.
Yeah, these terms are very sensitive for some people, because if you don't know, radio listeners, Universidad de los Lagos is located in a region where we have a big number of original peoples. The main ones are the Huilliche, and on the coast, and certainly the land has also been populated by people from other origins. Osorno actually was founded by the Spaniards like 500 years ago. Mm-hmm. Osorno is a name that was given by the Spaniards to this land. I understand that the original is
previously known as Charagawin. Yes, yeah, which is a Chesungun.
So this matter of culture and identity is something that I remember a professor that I had at the University of Southampton define culture as looking at an onion and all of the layers and sub-layers it has, because exactly. Everything is, you know, everything goes together.
Somehow related, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we look at different phenomena within the social construct, which is identity in certain ways, and how those concepts, those layers, as you say, kind of are similar in certain aspects with identities in other territories, in other lands, in other countries, in other continents. But what kind of particularities surge in this territory that make these identities unique? So there's a certain uniqueness to our local identities, which are multiple, as you say.
Yeah.
Mapuche, Huilliche, German ancestry, Spanish ancestry, Swiss ancestry, maybe some Czech or Russian ancestry here and there, other types of migrant populations that have located themselves in this area, Syrian, Palestinian, and others. But how that mix and that interaction with multiple other identities has created new identities, and how these are fluid, constantly changing, never static. It's something that theoretically it's kind of hard to grasp, but it's I believe it's something that we need to assume as part of what our existence on Earth is and will be.
yes, and all of this research is transformed into publications, I suppose. So
it is always one of our goals to translate it into publications, projects, but we also look to translate it into other types of forms of transference, as we call it today. Mm-hmm. That is working with communities. Retributing what we get from those communities, trying to give back something of what we produce in different forms. It can be workshops, it can be conferences, it can be seminars, it can be even working on certain aspects that local or other communities need to develop for themselves, and we can help them construct a project, carry out. Design the methodology, implement certain aspects of it. So we try to kind of contribute in both ways. The scientific aspect, which is what the university needs in certain aspects, mm-hmm. and what we need to do is part of our job as academics here at the university, but also what is our responsibility with the community that we are involved with.
Yes. Certainly Universidad de Los Lagos identifies with the region. And yes, we have met today Professor James Parkey, and you see he has told us lots of things that are going on at our university. Before saying goodbye to James, we would like him to choose another song so that he can let us know what his tastes in music are.
Well, two songs are hard to describe all the eclectic tastes in music that I have, but I've chosen it as a second song, this song by Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World, which kind of exemplifies a positive attitude, a way to find the good side of especially what we're going through these days in Chile.
Yes.
And hopefully kind of reflect a way of thinking of what what better parts we can see and hopefully learn to appreciate,
yes,
rather than simply walk by and not recognize.
It is certainly a song of gratitude, and that's what I have for you, James. Gratefulness.
Thank you.
You have been really kind to accept this invitation.
I appreciate it.
I wish you the best in your work at Ulaos.
Thank you.
Okay. We will see each other in the next program. Let's go. Thank you for listening. Bye.
I see trees of green. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the skies, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Oh, yeah.
Este fue el programa en inglés Let's Go.
Oh, yeah.
Los esperamos en nuestra siguiente edición. See you soon, guys.